This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, it's hour number two of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Some audio of Cowboys center Tyler Biadasz as rookies are there. And camp is, you know, getting underway with a slow acclimation period. What kind of things are Coach Mike McCarthy telling the players? And he even talks about a device that's helping the Cowboys socially distance. It's really interesting. Get some gadgets in here for you as well, Jeff. Thought you'd appreciate it.
Yeah, I got something for you, too. I nailed my bingo card, my DFW athlete COVID bingo card.
Oh, really?
Well, in hockey, they're doing a nice job. They're protecting their players. They're allowing teams to say, like, the Stars play today, their first exhibition game against the Predators.
Lovely.
And they're allowing their NHL teams to just say players are unfit to play the exhibition game.
Uh-huh.
Could be hurt, could be, you have no idea what it is.
Very hockey.
But Tyler Seguin is unfit to play the exhibition game today.
Okay, a little update there for you. Guys getting back on the ice.
Gallo Zeke Seguin. Nailed it! Nailed it!
Dude, if you had to pick, like, who's it going to be, those would be the guys that just, you know, jump to the top of your mind. Mm. Okay, is there a Maverick? Would that be Luka if you wanted to go for the superfecta?
Gosh, I might go KP.
Oh, yes.
If what's-his-name was still here, I'd go him easily. What was the super cocky tall guy? Not very good, but he was super cocky.
Super cocky tall guy?
Salah.
Oh, Salah Mej. Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that would have been a lock.
Yeah, it would have been the Mej.
They got some pretty good candidates there, man. Those European dudes, they tend to get after it a little bit. They tend to like, oh, man, yeah, I got some extra look at my belly. Smoking cigarettes in the offseason. I don't mean to generalize the European athlete, but there's a long history and tradition of those kind of things happening.
I got a Mejri story for anybody off air.
All right.
That dude, he's different.
Legend. A proper legend in some circles.
I mean, yeah, amongst probably partiers.
Yeah. Embarrassing for others. Depends on who you ask.
Yeah. Obnoxious.
Okay, Phillies have canceled all activities at Citizens Bank Park. That is one of the top developing stories of the afternoon, including their weekend series against the Blue Jays. Member of the coaching staff and a member of the home clubhouse staff tested positive for the virus. Very interesting because we saw in Tampa getting into double digits was enough to stop them. For the opening weekend wasn't enough, but then they exploded the next day. For the Phillies here, it's just a member of the coaching staff and a clubby. And boom, we're shutting everything down. It's not go home. It's not, you know, monitor closely for symptoms. It's we're not playing. And, Jeff, that's different than what I was expecting earlier in the week for MLB's approach to things to be.
Well, that seems like the right way because the Marlins, it was like, all right, we had a guy test positive, right? No big deal. Let's just keep him away from the other guys. And then it was just like bang, 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 and you went out and played a game.
Yeah.
So I think it would make a lot more sense to go, wait, someone tested positive. We need to wait 2 or 3 days to see if we've missed something somewhere and if there's about to be people who have been around them that are going to pop. So that would make sense to me. If somebody that's in your circle of Corona bubble baseball squad, if somebody shows a positive test, I think I would want them to wait 2 or 3 days and make everybody keep testing negative before you go play.
Okay, maybe I'm a jerk for this. You know, some people think I'm tone deaf. Some people think I'm a sissy when it comes to this corona. I need two players to get it. Because here's why. We had a tiny situation with Kansas City. A couple of those guys got it. Juan Soto with the Nationals. As long as we're not doing group hugs, you know, I need complete responsibility in the clubhouse, constant social distancing, and then two or three players can get it. I think the Marlins were just, you know, an example of absolute worst-case scenario.
Yeah, so I guess. Yeah, and I guess that kind of influences how we think. It's like, well, look at the Marlins.
Yeah,
it started off as just one guy, and the whole team has it. And, yeah, you know, the tests were a day later, and then another day later, and another day later. And so in my brain, I'm going, crap, we got to wait 3 days to make sure that nobody else has it that we don't know about yet.
Yeah.
But maybe they were just playing Red Rover or something in the clubhouse.
Were we doing elephant walks for team bonding or something,
maybe,
guys? What the heck, guys? Just insane what the Marlins have done to Major League Baseball. It could end up costing the organization and players money for not being responsible enough. It is time now for some Tyler Biotish audio. Hopefully, this man is, we could take the I out of his name by the end of the season and just know him as Tyler Badass, you know, for the rest of his Cowboys career. That's what I'm hoping for, Jeff.
A lot of people are already doing that because they don't know how to say his name, and instead of learning, they're just taking the easy way out, and I approve of that.
It'd be a killer nickname, and one he's probably already had through high school and college because of how he mauled guys and his route to the NFL. You say he's not strong enough, but we've seen guys overcome strength issues to be good offensive linemen. This is doable.
And they say he was banged up last year, where I believe last year was a shoulder, but he played through it.
I saw a guy that
had some issues with power, but he's still a good player.
Yeah. Okay, so 13, what was Mike McCarthy's first message to you as a team when it comes to the COVID? Here's the Cowboys' new center.
He was very specific on how to be really responsible, on how to stay safe in the environment we're in, and always wearing a mask at, you know, every time you can. Again, like I said before, it's been really a concrete message that, you know, safety first, and, you know, when we get off the field, put your mask back on and social distance. And even through our meetings, we're very particular about what distance we're at, and we have devices that let us know if we're too close to each other and everything. But, you know, his message was clear that we're definitely facing more than just football. We're facing COVID-19, which, you know, the whole world is doing, but it makes it a little bit more difficult. But he told us, you know, be accountable and be respectful to everyone on the team. So we're doing our part on the field and off the field.
Yeah, I love it, man. It sounds to me from that relay, Jeff, that the Cowboys have a good mindset about what to do with this virus.
I think that pretty much every team does in pro sports, and probably a lot of them in college sports. I think most of this just comes down to personal responsibility.
Yeah.
I think the vast majority of the names we've heard in sports that have ended up testing positive are people who weren't responsible enough.
Yeah.
And put themselves in spots where the risk is higher than if you were at home, except for when you didn't need to be, and distancing and wearing a mask.
Yeah, I think for players, you're right. It is going to come down to personal responsibility, being respectful of your teammates and what you do when you're away of the field. I think for a lot of players in this age range, especially after partying all summer and being in bars and on beaches and lakes with a bunch of people saying it's no big deal, you need to welcome them to the real world. They might have been in rich young person land for the last 5 or 6 months where there wasn't a lot of watching the news or paying attention. It's not been a concern for them. I mean, the economy is something that 90% of 20-somethings never think about, and, you know, probably 50% of 30-somethings, you know. So all of these series, it needs to be established, I think, by team leadership. This is very, very important for us, and you have a responsibility to one another to give us the best possible chance of not having to forfeit games, to having the best possible chance of not having family members pass on. You know, there's all, especially because once we arrive in this facility and we start rolling around with each other and the other teams, if anybody brings it to a game or practice, a lot of people are going to have it. It's going to be Miami Marlins breaking out all over the place. And then we'll have to hit the pause button and wait for 3 weeks for the entire league to come back. So, I like it. I think the constant reminders are a kind of peer pressure, you know, a constant reminder of what the rules are could be needed for a lot of different reasons. 16, you mentioned a device, Tyler, that helps you with distancing from one another. Can you explain a little bit more about that?
We have a monitor based on 6 feet of distance. It'll have a flashing red light if we're too close to one another, so we can monitor our space between each other.
All right. That's cool. Yeah.
Well, people. It's easier than guessing, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. You might be 5 1/4. Kind of need you to give me a few inches. No, red light, bro. Back up.
I think my personal radar start backing off people at around 4 feet. But if I could get a beep at 6 feet, I wouldn't mind that.
No, it'd be nice.
All right. How
I like
can
the
you...
places with the tape on the ground. You know, they give you a good feel for
it.
Oh,
yeah.
Or the people who have gone all out and have not just tape, but some sort of symbol with actually words on it. Like, they went to the trouble of printing something on something to then put on the floor. Those are my guys.
The only thing I don't get is when you're going into a grocery store, how you all have to go to one side and walk single file in. We're all congregating at this pinch point at one far end. I don't agree with that. I don't know if that's from WHO or CDC, but I'm going to need some evidence to understand why exactly that's best.
And what are you campaigning for as the alternative? Just a free
open
flow?
Entrances. Yeah. Okay. We can get as wide as possible. We got multiple doors opening with a big opening for us
maybe
all.
Maybe they're just trying to get you to go clockwise through the establishment so that we can try to keep everybody easily distancing.
And if you were going to line me up in an assembly line and say, listen, we're all going snake up and down, there's going to be no cross traffic, I'd be with it. Yeah. But they line that up to the front door, and then once you go in, it's Thunderdome, in the words of LeBron James.
You know.
It is.
People aren't trying to be told what's what once they get in the grocery store, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm only going down the vegetable aisle and then aisle 7, aisle 13, and I'm out of here.
Well, yeah, there's got to be exit points, right? We'll go snake through every aisle. If you want to jump aisles, there's a lane for that. Or if you want to jump to exit, there's a lane for that as well.
I like this. Just make sure. But every aisle is a one way.
Like, hey,
we can't.
If you want to take it that serious, be consistent once we're inside.
Otherwise,
just let me walk to the front door the way I want to. Can you describe the COVID protocols that are in place on this for a daily basis? Here's more Tyler Biotish.
Well, first, when you wake up, you have to, it's a pre-scanning. Whether you have a cough or you have a symptom of COVID-19, and you have to go, which is about 4 questions, and then you have to show them while entering the building. And when you enter the building, you check in and get your device. And then after you get your device, you go to the COVID-19 testing that we do daily. And then once we get that done, we start and get ready for our lift as of right now for the rookies. That I'm attending. So, and then after that, it's really, you know, like I said before, social distancing throughout the day and attending our meetings and walkthroughs. So then right after the day, you know, that's where the accountability comes back in, and you have to be respectful and social distance as, you know, we go back to the Omni Hotel Red Cross.
Dude, I think they got it. I like this. You're coming in, you're getting reminders, you got the bracelet, you got the test. They're doing as good as possible. Do they also have a bracelet that monitors, like, their temperature and their potential vitals that could indicate corona before you even start to feel symptoms? See, this is good for my NFL confidence. My NFL confidence has been at, like, a 5-month low right now. But I think the Cowboys are doing a pretty good job, and if they are, I imagine the rest of the league is as well.
Well, I would like to shout out to the Tolos. About 20 different Tolos probably on the Autoflex Leasing fan text have said grocery store, they are just keeping a count. If they get you through one entrance, it's easy to keep like an occupancy count, how many people are coming and going. And okay. I'd also like to thank the one guy from the 817 who went with, they're keeping count of people entering, dumbass. He just wanted to add that in there.
But they're not. They're not. I've been to stores that are keeping count. They have somebody there with an iPad, and they're going, dot, 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 you're in. Oh, we
maybe
need more people.
Eye in the sky. Maybe they got somebody somewhere in a room doing a, well, would you
well, show me evidence of that. Show me some evidence of that. No, don't just call me a dumbass. Because there is nobody saying, hey, we've had too many people. I've been to those kinds of stores, dumbass. Assumer guy. Dumb assumer on the Autoflex Leasing fan text. You know? Show me some, because I'm going to store. They're not holding anybody up. Are they just monitoring to see how many people they have in the grocery store? What good's that doing?
I think that's what it would be, is maybe we just haven't been to one where they've hit occupancy. Occupancy in the grocery store, I'm sure, is pretty high. I don't know, man. I would like to apologize to the texter for Gavin's language, because I wanted to be the first one to call you a dumbass back.
Yeah. Okay.
So.
Thank you, Jeff.
That's some total.
All right. Who else is who else do we have here? We got more audio. We got, do you feel like you guys are behind where you should be right now in a normal off season? Here's the final cut from Tyler Biotish.
I think as of right now, it's kind of a tough question. But I think mentally with the playbook itself, I think we're piecing it together with each install every day, and our coaches are doing a great job with us and making sure, we get down the stuff we need to get down. But at the same time, like I said before, I trained as much as I could, when I was alone back in Wisconsin. So, some stuff you could do and some stuff you couldn't, whether you had the facilities or not. And, for the first part of COVID-19, a lot of like recovery places, there wasn't many. And I think, now when I'm here, I'm always staying at the facility late, trying to get more recovery and everything like that. So, I mean, it's hard to tell because we had such a big span of time that we didn't have with the team and everything like that. Because some workouts, like I said before, you could do and you couldn't do based on where you were located and how strict the rules were. But, I think just we're piecing it together week by week and we're getting better. And I think if we keep doing that, we'll be able to get to where we need to be for the season.
All right. Good stuff from Biotish. Sounds like he's got it handled. That comes to being a self-manager. I think guys like Biotish are locked in. There's going to be some dudes that show up, but they got a month and they're in their 20s.
Well, I hope he plays well and wins the starting job. But next time I'd like to interview Joe Looney.
He is. Yeah, he's pure entertainment. Joe Looney's the best.
You got to pep it up a little bit over there, Tyler.
I've been told I'm also a dumbass for assuming 20-year-olds don't pay attention to the economy. I said 90% of them don't.
Dumbass.
We were 20 somethings. Yes, about 10% do. The nerds, the sons of accountants, the people who, just became obsessed early on with savings and they arrive in their 20s like, this is my priority. I'm going to retire. There's your go-getters. 90% of Americans, it's failure to launch, are still depending on their parents in their 20s. There's no good jobs for them. They're making 15, 16 bucks an hour coming out of college. Go through a Chick-fil-A drive-thru. Those are college graduates who got a degree in hospitality. That's why they're so GD good at their jobs, because there's nothing to go into. So at that point, you're not looking at the big picture of the economy. You're looking at how do I keep my rent paid and have enough money to have a little bit of fun. See what you did, Jeff? You got me started on these Autoflex Leasing Fantech. I could do this for 5 hours arguing with these people.
That's what I was going to say. Keep texting in, everybody, especially if you disagree or you're angry.
How about this guy? Bleep that guy. Put some respect on Gavin's name. That's what I'm talking about, 469. Leave your name and city you're texting from. We'll make you famous right here in the nation. The NFL 100 did it again. Everybody's talking about it. We'll discuss that and more as Mike Fisher joins us now on your home of the Cowboys. How the hell are you, Fish?
That NFL 100 is quite a good trick. That's a good party trick, isn't it?
Yeah, and it is interesting to, try to figure out how the players see it and how the players rank them. It's interesting for a lot of reasons.
It's interesting for a lot of reasons, including it's complete nonsense.
Most of the time.
Especially, here's the nonsensical part. Again, not that everybody's opinion doesn't count, but here's the kind of the behind-the-curtain part of it. So I've been in the locker room now for years. This used to be the Pro Bowl. It used to be the same kind of silliness for the Pro Bowl. This is like 1991, 1992, and all the players just went in to a meeting. Like all the offensive linemen went in, and the offensive line coach told them, hey, we're going to vote for these guys as the defensive linemen for the Pro Bowl, okay? Okay, nobody argued, nobody cared. And the modern version of that is that you'll be sitting in the locker room sometime in December, and here will come, it's usually a couple young ladies with clipboards, and they're going around from player to player asking them if they'll help them fill out the top 100. Mm-hmm. And I bet you this goes on in all 32 NFL cities, but in the Cowboys locker room, like 30 guys say, no, I'm too busy. So they end up getting, so Joe Looney ends up saying yes. So the Cowboys influence and Jalen Smith says yes, and Cooper Rush said yes, so and Jordan Lewis said yes. So there might have been four guys in the Cowboy locker room who actually did the Cowboy voting for the NFL 100. And I have a feeling that, most of the players take it that seriously, which is not very much at all. So that doesn't take away from the very cool support for Lamar Jackson, but it doesn't necessarily really mean that NFL players think Lamar Jackson's better than Patrick Mahomes, or that Carson Wentz isn't any good at all, or that last year the Cowboys had eight guys in the top 100, but boy, they're a certain percentage suckier this year because they only have six. So there's a lot of silliness attached to the interest as well.
I just love it because when players or people act like, well, you didn't play the game, how could you know? I'd be like, well, you played the game. Look at this list y'all came up with.
Yeah, exactly right. And, you know, if you really did a serious survey, like if there was money attached to it, and everybody voted, it seems to me that Patrick Mahomes would finish first, wouldn't he?
I would think so.
And I don't know, was Aaron Donald third?
Yes, I think it went Mahomes, Wilson, Donald, Mahomes.
Okay. Now, wasn't the cornerback from the Patriots up there somewhere too?
He might have been five.
Okay. Like, he had a great year, but he's not as good a player as Aaron Donald. He just had a great year.
He's had a couple really good years.
I would say that Gilmore's not as good at his job as Donald is, but
I would say that too.
He's the best in the league at it, and it's hard to do.
And then the Russell Wilson thing's fascinating because I didn't go check. Maybe you guys know this. Where was he last year or 2 years ago? I bet you he wasn't this elite. So good for the league for recognizing what a special guy he is. And then, yeah, if Patrick Mahomes and other guys want to, like he did on Twitter, which was fun and funny, he's like, okay, I'm making a list of all you guys who are disrespecting me. If that helps somebody get over their hump, fine. So if somebody on the Cowboys who didn't make it swears, I can't believe I'm not in the top 100, and that inspires them somehow, that's fine. It reminds me of my old Emmitt Smith story. His first day here, remember the polka dot gym short jumpsuit? Remember that? You ever seen that? I'm sure.
Yeah,
you
have. He was looking good.
Yeah, incredible. One of a kind. Never wore it again, I don't believe, Emmitt, did you? And here he comes in his orange and brown jumpsuit, and we get to sit down for a one-on-one interview back in a cubicle. So I'm sitting there with the 20-year-old Emmitt Smith, and I asked him, so what inspires you? He says, my whole life, they told me I was too slow. I said, okay, probably not your whole life. You weren't too slow when you were 10, and you weren't too slow when you were 15. Maybe they told you that when you were 19. And they always told me I was too light. And I'm looking at him, I go, I don't know, man. You know, I'm thinking to myself, you're like, 5'9", 200 pounds. I'm not buying
that. You got a scholarship to the University of Florida.
I know.
You know.
They always told me I was too short. I'm like, I don't know, Emmett. You know, this is 1990, and you're 5'9". And by the way, in addition to, Jeffrey, what you just said, his growing up story, and I hope I'm not exaggerating this too much, there's two beauties on it. One is, when he was eight, he went and played with the 11-year-olds.
He's too slow to play with the 8-year-olds.
Yeah, but he was too slow. He might have been slower than some 11-year-olds, but he was probably the fastest 8-year-old in Pensacola. And then when he got to high school, and he tells this story, not in a bragging way, that he didn't do this his sophomore year, but by the time he was a senior, he started closing his eyes when he got the handoff and guessing at the hole to see if he could instinctively find it.
That's awesome.
It's incredible. Dumb.
but he still rushed for 10 billion yards as a high school kid. So in other words, he was toying with everybody else his whole life. So he's sitting here telling me, well, you know, they always said I was too short and too small and too light and too. And I finally said to him, I said, who says all this? What idiot says all this? And then he admitted to me, and it was the beginning of a beautiful friendship, because he admitted to me, you know, some of these things I just tell myself to inspire myself. So
yeah.
He created hurdles. And we've all, any of us who are competitive, we all have done that. We create, that guy has to get me. I'll show him, right?
You have to show confidence, so you can't acknowledge it's like your actual mind thinking it, because that would be insecurity or lack of confidence. You right. got to tell yourself the lie that this is what the other people are saying.
And there you go. So the Emmitt Smith creating invisible hurdles. So yeah, if Dak or Zach or anybody else, Jalen or anybody else in this list thinks they're too low and it inspires them, then God bless them. Go get it.
You know, one of the keys to happiness that I've found is common with people that talk about this kind of stuff is understanding how toxic the comparative mind can be, Fish, because you're constantly sitting around thinking, I'm not strong enough, I'm not good looking enough, I'm not fast enough, I'm not tall enough, heavy enough. And it sucks to try to be happy if you're stuck in comparative mind. But if you're looking for motivation for a 20-year-old who has nothing but testosterone and raw horsepower to take off, you know, those kind of things, letting them eat at you and drive you every day, those insecurities or what other people say or what yourself tells while you're inside that comparative mind, that's where you find the kind of drive. It might not be healthy, but boy, Jordan and Emmitt, two of the greatest goats of all time, they sure did employ it in heavy doses with delusion.
Yeah. Nope, nobody believes in us.
Yeah,
right. I know we have a 13-3 record going into the playoffs, but nobody believes in us. It's us against the world. It's a good trick. You can't do it to yourself forever. By the time you win 3 Super Bowls in 4 years, you're not fooling anybody anymore. But, yeah, go for it, Cowboys, if you feel dissed by this. Meanwhile, exclusive, as you heard this morning on the Sean and RJ show, we broke the story here on The Fan of the blue-white scrimmage. And there's a couple, and we can kind of dig into it a little bit. There's a couple aspects of this, though. Obviously, it's always, you know, when you get a good story first, that's always fun and enriching, and Gavin Spittle gives you a big 6-feet-away hug and all that kind of stuff. But the other thing here is sometimes you break a story and it's bad news or it's sad news or it's there's an argument over it. It's controversial. This one, this is universal glee, is the reaction to our story today. August 30th on the evening of AT&T Stadium, blue-white scrimmage 2 weeks before the opener. It's not in cement yet, but it's getting there. They're figuring out a way to have fans in the building. Probably season ticket holders will get first crack at it. I don't know what the limits will be, Gavin, on how many bodies get to be in the building, that kind of thing. But a blue-white scrimmage, not in Oxnard, not in 70-degree weather. Yeah, not with Broadus wearing a windbreaker, but
on TV, though?
You know, that's a good question. I didn't ask that, but that's got to be the call, right?
I hope so. Yeah, it would make sense. I know they've done scrimmages like that before on like TXA-21 or whatever. That'd be amazing.
Right, and obviously 105.3 The Fan will be all over that thing. But the reason it's important, this is another level of it, is we're not going to get preseason games, so we're not going to get all the opportunities, and those players aren't. Those bubble players aren't going to get opportunities. So this is their chance, and then obviously some semblance of a full-speed game, so that'll be good for all involved. So really a gigantic piece of news here at 105.3 The Fan, and obviously as the Cowboys station, we will own that thing as we always do.
Mike Fisher here with us in the G-Bag Nation. Trayvon Diggs talking today?
Yeah, he was the media guest today. And he said a couple things that were really insightful. One of them, and you're always looking for a guy to come in and be, as a player, be mature behind his years, right? That would be nice. And he did mention that his goal is to be a starter. And what other way to go? You might as well. By the way, Jeffrey, you can take your pencil out. You can start almost projecting that a little bit, can't you? That's
for sure.
Unrealistic.
No.
He would have to, in a lot of ways, he'd have to leapfrog over a handful of veterans. Agreed?
Yes.
Because Anthony Brown thinks he's starting caliber, and Jordan Lewis thinks he's starting caliber, and even Daryl Worley, he's been a starter for the Raiders for the last couple of years. And I guess we would put Cheeto in as the number one guy. So this would be a leap, but he's got it in his vision. Here's the maturity part of it. Here's his comment. He was asked about, did you think about opting out? No, not at all. And then he said, and this sounds like an old man talking that's been playing for 20 years. It's been a weird off season, but football is all about adjustments. What a great way for a kid to accept the weird fate that's been thrown these guys. Hey, football's about adjustments. So COVID-19 will adjust. And if you're a Cowboy fan, that kind of remark and that kind of mindset, I think, gives you hope that not only might Trayvon Diggs be wise beyond his years in terms of his physical ability, but he clearly seems to be wise beyond his abilities in his mental capacity at this point.
Great stuff, Fish. Anything else before we let you go?
A simple salute.
Right on. Salute back to you. There he is. He's at Fish Sports on Twitter. A must follow. He's all over the NBA. I'm sure he'll have Mavs storylines for you tomorrow at 3:20 as the Mavs get set to take on the Rockets in the bubble.
1-2 the count. Bases loaded. Two outs. Tie game. Eighth inning. Rondon deals. Elvis swings. Lines one. Left center. Base hit. One run is home. Two runs are home. Elvis Andrews delivers. Rangers lead 6-4.
Let's go. They won 7-4 here on your home of the Rangers last night. Salute to Eric Nadell on the call. Your Rangers pre- and post-game show host, our Rangers insider, and play-by-play man himself, Jared Sandler, joining us here on The Fan. And a good afternoon, Sands. How the heck are you?
I'm great, guys. How are y'all?
We're doing great. Who got your player of the game last night? Was it Elvis for the game-winning ribby? There were some pretty good candidates in there.
No, I think we ended up giving it to Todd Frazier. He had three extra base hits, which was a career high, and his double after the Joey Gallo home run got that additional rally going to create a five-run inning. So he ended up getting the player of the game. Joey was in there. Lance was in there. Elvis definitely deserves some consideration as well. But I think it's the first time all year, and I know it's just five games, but where you could look at the Rangers lineup and point to a number of different guys who stepped up, and that was definitely good to see. And I think it was, listen, you guys know I'm very big on not overreacting to one game or even five games, but just with the circumstances of the season, I think that was a very good thing and a very necessary thing to have happen as they get set to go on the road.
Oh, I told Gavin, that would have been the seventh inning. It was top of the eighth inning. I was planning out segments on how terrible the Rangers are today and into the future and how I quit. And I was done with everything. And then the eighth inning happened, and I was like, you know, baseball's kind of wild, though. Anything can happen over the course of a season, especially a short one. These bats are kind of getting hot. Everything is good. How rare is it that a pitcher gives up a couple of runs that gives the other team the lead in the inning he pitches, and yet he gets the win?
So not common, but there was a book written by Brian Kenny. I forget the title for the life of me. I read it like 3 or 4 years ago, and it's about some of the different stats and the different conversations we now have in baseball, and it was one of the first pieces of work to really discredit the pitcher win stat. Now, a guy goes seven scoreless innings and he gets a win. That's a win well earned. But Jonathan Hernandez came in, gave up two runs in his one inning, and he gets the win. And
yeah.
Basically, the passage of the book has some pretty interesting numbers on how much more frequent that is than what you'd expect. That doesn't mean it happens a ton, but definitely more than you'd expect. And how often a pitcher can go seven innings and allow two or fewer runs and not pick up the win. Jonathan Hernandez vulture to win there, but that's okay. I think the Rangers will take that. And it was definitely nice, you know, as you were talking about, you know, what you were thinking in that top of the eighth, Jeff. You know, I was thinking about that bullpen and what the conversations were going to be. And it definitely changes the scope of the conversation when, you know, you put up five runs in the bottom of the eighth inning. So now that bullpen is going to be a topic of discussion, especially if we hear tomorrow that Jose Leclerc's tests on his tight shoulder turn out to be more than just a day-to-day thing. And so I guess to create my own segue there, but just to, I guess, update the Tolos on that test today. I'm sure we won't find out until tomorrow. My guess is if he is out for some, you know, portion of time, the Rangers aren't going to come out and right away say this guy's our closer. There'll probably be opportunities given to possibly Nick Goody, Jonathan Hernandez, and Edinson Volquez probably would be the candidates to fulfill that role in Jose Leclerc's absence if he needs to miss time.
Well, Jared, you didn't have to segue because my next question is, Leclerc was warming up to take the ball in the ninth, and then Goody had to get there and warm up. What's going on with Leclerc?
Yeah.
Oh, you already answered that.
Now, it was interesting. I did think, Jeff, while the closer for the home team typically would pitch the top of the ninth in a tie game, there was a second where it's like, wait a second, are they subtly changing Leclerc's role after two appearances? But then, obviously, that's not the case. So the shoulder tightness, I know that, as you know, Rangers fans don't have to track back that far to remember the last time a pitcher dealt with shoulder tightness. That was Corey Kluber. He did 4 weeks of no throw. Hopefully, the Jose Leclerc fate is something a little bit less severe with less time missed than that, but we'll find out probably tomorrow.
All right, Jared, I got to let you know that I have not seen every American League game played.
Ooh.
And part of the reason that I was hoping they would not give up the lead before they got it back is Lance Lynn deserves to be 2-0. Lance Lynn has now taken the ball twice, thrown 12 innings, given up a grand total of 3 hits and no runs. I couldn't imagine there's anybody in the American League who's thrown the ball better through 2 starts.
Should we just get Lance Lynn the Cy Young right now?
Well, that's an interesting question. Let me turn that question around on you. Should we either give him the Cy Young now or trade him now?
Well, I don't think the latter is going to take place right now. Now,
when's the deadline? When's the deadline now?
August 31st. So
okay.
Here's the thing. And first of all, as far as American League pitchers, Gerrit Cole, is someone who had a good first start, not as good of a second start. Guys who have made 2 starts, and there's really only maybe a couple handfuls worth. But Lance Lynn has the most innings pitched in Major League Baseball without giving up a run, American League or National League. Another guy who pitched well, but it's only been 1 start, is Zach Plesac. He went 8 scoreless with 11 strikeouts. So I guess he's a guy that if you want to give a 3-4 start Cy Young, he's in contention. But the trade deadline's interesting to me, guys, because there's no blueprint for this, and there are a lot of variables in play that we've never really had to consider. You know, from 8 playoff teams per league, 16 out of the 30 teams in the league will make the playoffs, and how does that separate the waters of buyer and seller? And obviously there are people who are in between who aren't quite sure what to do. How does that impact the market? And then another thing, I know it might not seem like a lot, but when you make a trade on July 31st, or in the case of the Rangers when they acquired Cliff Lee a few weeks before, you're getting that player for at least 2 months, and then possibly more if you go to the postseason. In this scenario, you might only be guaranteed a month. And while that month is super important, I just wonder, in conversations, Jeff, if I'm trying to trade with you, you know that you're going to use that month as leverage. You're going to try and drive down the price by saying, well, wait a second, I'm only getting this guy for a month. I mean, I'm not giving you prospect 2 and prospect 4. That's ridiculous. So I just don't know how those conversations are going to play out. My guess is that the big names that we're used to hearing about will still be discussed as potential trade candidates, but won't get moved, or not nearly as many. But you'll see a lot of relievers change teams, because relievers are typically a little easier to move. And those are the guys I would expect to be traded. I don't know if any big names, and Lance Lynn would definitely fit into that category. I don't know if guys like that are going to be moved. I just wonder what the market's going to look like.
It's Jared Sandler here with us in the Nation. Is there any evidence to you that maybe the dimensions of the ballpark is in the players' heads a little bit?
I guess I can't say for sure, but Louis Ortiz, the hitting coach, yesterday said that. He said as much. And the way I think I might have shared this with you guys yesterday, or maybe it was nosebleeds, but it's like, you have your house that you live in 300 some odd days out of the year, and then you got maybe a hotel that you're going to for a weekend, and why it might impact the Rangers differently than a visiting team. A visiting team goes to Globe Life Field, and maybe they're intimidated by the way the ball doesn't carry, whatever the case might be, but it's not in their heads because they know that they're out of there in 2 days anyway. Just like you go to a hotel, you don't like the way the walls painted, whatever. I mean, you think about it, but like, it's not a big deal. But if it's your house, if it's where you're going to be more often than not, you're going to do something about it, or you're going to think about it. I think it's possible. I thought Elvis had something really interesting to say after the game yesterday when he mentioned that, maybe this park will force them to become better hitters, because at the old park, you could miss hit a ball, and it can be a home run easy with the way the ball carried. Balls off the end of the bat, you get jammed. balls that in other parks are routine flyouts, but that's not going to happen in this park. And so it might force them to really think about using the entire field and put together more disciplined approaches, because you don't have the same leeway that you do it or you did at the old park. Now, I think five games in, that's not enough to truly determine whether this will be as much of a pitcher's park as the narrative has suggested. But it definitely is more so a pitcher's park than the last one. And I do think that while I don't know how to quantify it, it definitely was doming them up a little bit, because that was such a big part of the conversation even leading up to the season. So it was like they were predisposed to that being the case. And then when there weren't home runs for the first two games, you know, that thought is only growing within their heads.
Mm-hmm. So even the dimensions themselves points to likely this is going to be a pitcher's park. And that, I guess that kind of strikes me as odd that you would do that to your new stadium. I would think most people would lean offense and not pitching. So now I'm creating a conspiracy theory in my own head. You ready for this one?
Well, yeah, but then I might debunk it right away, but go ahead.
Well, you can try, but it's pretty sound. I just came up with it. The Rangers have done a poor enough job drafting and developing starting pitching and have had to go trade for them or sign guys and hope that they could be healthy or whatever, that now you get you a ballpark where maybe a lot of people can pitch in it.
Well, now what if I told you that the outfield, the square footage of the outfield in this park is actually less than the old park?
I don't know what that means, just because it's so short.
So now that doesn't mean that the last park was more pitcher friendly, but I think it's less to do with the dimensions, more to do with the way the ball carries. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see. The ball does carry more when the roof's open. But, you know, I do think, Jeff, to your theory, I do think that they wanted it to be more of a fair park. Like, I think that when you look at the 30 ballparks at the end of the year and you rank them 1 through 30 based on most pitcher-friendly to least pitcher-friendly, the last one was always in the half of that group that was on the more hitter-friendly, least, you know, less so pitcher-friendly. I think they'd like this park to be really close to the middle. Now if it ends up leaning way more to the pitcher side, then maybe you see dimensions change. I mean, that happened at Comerica. I believe it happened at Petco Park after those parks debuted and they were super, super pitcher-friendly. So that can always change, but I do think, you know, to what you're saying, Jeff, I think they did not want this to be a hitter's haven. They did not want this to be a place that was going to deter pitchers from wanting to pitch here. But I also don't think that they want this to be a place that scares hitters away either. You know, I think they want it to be right smack dab in the middle and be inviting to everyone. They want it to be inclusive. They don't want to discriminate between hitters or pitchers.
Appreciate you, Sands. Have a good one.
See you guys.
There he goes. He's at Jared Sandler on Twitter. A must-follow Ranger fans. Follow him. He's got all kinds of news and insights into your baseball team.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.